ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello and welcome to The World Today. It's Monday the 2nd of March. I'm Annie Guest, coming to you from the lands of the Turrbal and Yuggera people in Brisbane. Today, deadly strikes pound the Middle East as Israel and Iran trade missiles after the death of Iran's supreme leader. And what could a war in the region mean for our fuel supply and hip pocket?
The International Energy Agency recommends is 90 days of coverage. Australia has, on average, 50. So, you know, really, really worst case scenario. In less than a month, Australia will have no petrol or diesel.
Israel has begun striking Hezbollah in Lebanon after earlier it intercepted missiles launched from Lebanon by the Iran-backed militant group. It comes as the full scale of military strikes on Iran by the United States and Israel reverberate across the region. Among the death toll, Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, along with many of his senior allies. David Sparks has more.
American missiles and fighter jets launched from sea, part of an extraordinary wave of attacks on Iran. The US released the footage, showing off its military might. The barrage reportedly killed around 40 senior Iranian leaders, including Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. President Donald Trump has released a video statement.
Over the past 36 hours, the United States and its partners have launched Operation Epic Fury, one of the largest, most complex, most overwhelming military offensives the world has ever seen. Nobody's seen anything like it.
He says the strikes hit hundreds of targets in Iran, all within a matter of minutes. And he had this to say about Ayatollah Khamenei.
Iran's formerly supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, is dead. This wretched and vile man had the blood of hundreds and even thousands of Americans on his hands and was responsible for the slaughter of countless thousands of innocent people all across many countries.
Donald Trump also claims Iranian forces are in disarray.
The entire military command is gone as well, and many of them want to surrender into saving their lives. They want immunity. They're calling by the thousands.
He insists the operation will continue until the US's objectives are achieved, which is to completely eliminate the Iranian regime. Meanwhile, Iran's leadership is furious at the killing of the Ayatollah. Ali Larijani is secretary of the Supreme National Security Council.
This incident is an extremely bitter one for all of us and for the entire Iranian nation. The United States and the Zionists have deeply burned the heart of the Iranian people.
The scale of the American-Israeli barrage and Iran's retaliation is enormous. Reuters reports the CIA spent months tracking the movements of senior Iranian leaders. That information was shared with Israeli intelligence, and the timing of these strikes was coordinated. B-2 stealth bombers struck Iran's ballistic missile facilities with 2,000-pound bombs. Iranian officials say 153 people were killed when one strike hit a girls' school in Minab. Iran launched counterattacks on targets in multiple countries. Israel says at least 11 people have been killed by Iran's retaliatory strikes there. Iran also struck US bases in Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates. Three US personnel have been killed so far, and President Trump warns more US deaths are likely.
David Sparks. For his perspective on the developments, earlier I spoke to Dr. Ali Mamouri, a research fellow at Deakin University, who's of Iranian and Iraqi heritage. Firstly, Ali Mamouri, as someone who's spent most of your life in Iran, what's your gut reaction to the US and Israel attack and Iran's subsequent strikes in the region?
My immediate reaction is concern about the escalation and the human cost. Iranian people are in a very difficult position, just screwed between two parts, from the regime and from the foreign actors.
You taught at the Tehran University and other Iranian institutions for 15 years. What's your perspective on the Islamic Republic regime?
I don't support the Islamic Republic regime. They promise people stability, prosperity, and democracy and human rights. They failed in many aspects of that, and they are on the lowest legitimacy at their own at their whole history.
Donald Trump explicitly called on the Iranian people who are opposed to the regime to rise up and overtake the Islamic Republic when the military operations conclude. And there's great hope, especially in the diaspora. Do you see a pathway to regime change and democracy here?
Not at all. The history shows us that democracy does not come through revolution or foreign invasion. Democracy comes through a long period of negotiations with the state and ongoing reforms. What I can see it in this pathway is more destruction and chaos. What we saw it in other countries like Iraq, Libya, Syria, and even in the Western history like Spain in 1930s civil war.
Some Iranians in the country have been chanting the name of Reza Pahlavi, the exiled son of the late Shah, who wants to be a transition leader and help the country towards democracy. So then what do you say about that? What's your perspective on his ambitions?
He has the legacy of his father and his grandfather, who both developed the country and made many positive change, although they've been both very brutal dictators as well. During all of his time here, in exile, he was not able to establish a council, a gathering, bringing all oppositions together. I don't see it how would be able to deliver democracy to Iranian people without all this practice and history.
So what might be the fate of the Iranian people here then, especially those who've openly celebrated the assassination of the supreme leader, Ali Khamenei?
If this kind of gathering developed to something that might cause security challenge for the regime, they will face crackdown, especially that the regime is still is strong inside and all of its security forces still are loyal. It has over a million staff members and they will face crackdown, yes.
A three-person council is holding power until Khamenei's successor is chosen. Is there a potential power vacuum and a weakening of the government now?
Due to the ongoing crisis in the regime, it seems to me that the leadership has been ready and probably they already have a short list names and candidates, and I assume quickly or at least not for a very long time, we're going to have a new supreme leader in Iran.
Last year, Donald Trump celebrated what he called obliterating Iran's nuclear capacity in the 12-day war, and now says eliminating Iran's nuclear capacity is the justification for this attack. What's your perspective on the legality of this mission?
That exactly shows that there are something else behind of all this campaign.
What's that something else?
It seems to me that the real agenda is domestic problem that is facing Donald Trump. Donald Trump has a problem with Epstein file crisis and scandal.
Jeffrey Epstein.
Yep, exactly. And he also failed in delivering his promises to delivering peace in Ukraine, Russia, that he said he will bring it in 24 hours. So he needs something new to make a distraction for people. Another thing about it, that Israeli Prime Minister, he's the close partner to Donald Trump, and they are both working together to establishing a new hegemony in the Middle East, which will bring more destruction and problem rather than peace.
Ali Mamouri, thank you very much for joining the world today.
My pleasure. It was a pleasure speaking to you, Annie.
And Dr. Mamouri is from Deakin University. The conflict has thrown global air travel into chaos. Major airports and airspace across the Middle East remain closed. Travellers are warned there may be disruptions for days, and the situation could change rapidly, as Bridget Fitzgerald reports.
Melbourne man Luke Oakley had just landed in Dubai in what was supposed to be a four-hour stopover on his way to London when he learned the US and Israel had launched an attack on Iran.
Went to the gate regardless, no flights cancelled yet or anything like that. Went to the gate, started going through, and they just were about to start getting people onto the plane. When we got word, we're just going to hold off the security incident.
Thousands of flights have been cancelled around the world amid the escalating conflict in the Middle East. Dubai, the world's busiest airport, was one of a number of airports hit by retaliatory Iranian missile strikes. United Arab Emirates airspace has been shut down, which means all flights in and out of Dubai and Abu Dhabi have been suspended. Luke Oakley is now stuck in Dubai, waiting for travel to resume. He says hearing missiles overhead and watching smoke from strikes has been surreal.
The orders are shelter in place, and so basically we're just staying in our hotel rooms. We can go out if we want to. Certainly today there's not very many people out there. But no, at the moment, yeah, it's pretty much we're just hunkering down. We're keeping an eye on the news. We're keeping an eye out for the alerts, the Australian government and all of that kind of thing, and staying in place. That, you know, the military here, the defence is here obviously doing an outstanding job. So I think we're pretty safe, fingers crossed for now.
Qatari airspace is also closed, which has left all flights through Doha Airport suspended. The federal government is warning travellers to prepare for serious disruptions and delays in the next few days. Anyone booked on flights to Dubai, Abu Dhabi and Qatar are being urged to contact their airlines directly for updates. Melbourne Airport spokesman Andrew Lund says travellers should wait at home rather than turning up to the airport.
Wait somewhere more comfortable is the reason for telling people not to come to the airport. The airlines have been pretty proactive in terms of letting people know about cancellations. So we are asking people if your flight has been cancelled not to come to the airport.
Disrupted travellers are also being advised it's unlikely their losses will be covered by travel insurance. Dean Long is the CEO of the Australian Travel Industry Association.
Well, travel insurance is almost identical to all types of insurance. The minute there's a war, effectively brings to effect avoiding of key elements of that policy regarding disruption. So if people's flights or trips has been delayed, they are going to be on the hook for that level of expenditure because they won't be able to claim on travel insurance.
Dean Long says travellers seeking compensation should not cancel their flights.
If you haven't cancelled your ticket, the airline has to either provide you a full refund or a rebooking at no expense. If you cancel that ticket, you effectively fall back on the rights that were in your ticket, which means you'll have to pay for the cancellation, pay for the change fee and pay for any fare differential.
Australia's Department of Foreign Affairs has warned people not to travel to countries in the region, including the UAE, Qatar and Israel. It's estimated there are around 115,000 Australians currently in the Middle East. Foreign Affairs Minister Penny Wong says the government needs to wait until commercial flights resume before it can consider repatriations. Travellers are being advised to check directly with their airline for the latest updates or check the Smart Traveller website.
Bridget Fitzgerald. Thanks for listening to The World Today on ABC Radio across Australia and on ABC Listen. Subscribe to the podcast for all our stories. Just search for The World Today. Among the Western allies expressing support for the American and Israeli strikes on Iran, the United Kingdom is giving the US access to its Middle East bases. But the United Nations has condemned the attacks, instead calling for a return to negotiations. Closer to home, the fallout from the conflict could extend to fuel pumps in Australia, as Kimberly Price reports.
On the streets of Paris, French Iranians celebrate.
Democracy for Iran! Democracy for Iran!
The crowds cheer for the Crown Prince of Iran, who has been living in exile for more than 50 years. Similar demonstrations have taken place across the world. Western governments have supported the United States and Israel's actions. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese was the first to back the strikes, followed by France and Canada. United Kingdom's Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer says British jets have already been used to intercept Iranian strikes, and he has allowed British bases in the region to be used by the US.
We have taken the decision to accept this request, to prevent Iran firing missiles across the region, killing innocent civilians, putting British lives at risk, and hitting countries that have not been involved. We are not joining these strikes, but we will continue with our defensive actions in the region.
But some other nations, including China and Brazil, have condemned the attacks. Russia's state TV announced the president's condolences.
Vladimir Putin said to the Iranian president that the killing of Ali Khamenei was committed in cynical violation of all norms of human morality and international law.
United Nations High Commissioner for the Human Rights Volker Turk has urged for a return to the negotiating table.
Bombs and missiles are not the way to resolve differences, but only result in death, destruction and human misery.
Concerns are mounting for the economic fallout from the conflict, as roughly 20% of the world's oil supplies travel through the Strait of Hormuz between Iran and Oman. Around 4% of Australia's total oil supplies come from neighbouring countries. Kevin Morrison is from the Institute of Energy Economics and Financial Analysis.
Now, studies have been done for every 1% of a disruption in oil supply can have an effect of pushing up the oil price by 4%. So if we're talking about 20% of oil supplies, at the worst case scenario, we could be looking at an 80% rise.
Oil traders reported a 10% jump in barrel prices on Sunday. Kevin Morrison says prices at the bowser will go up and warns of Australia's low oil supply.
The International Energy Agency recommends is 90 days of coverage. Australia has on average 50. Now it's worse for petrol and diesel, which are the two biggest oil products we consume. They're both about 25 days. So, you know, really, really worst case scenario, in less than a month, Australia will have no petrol or diesel.
Robert Brooks is from Monash University's Department of Economics. He says a jump in oil prices can lead to inflationary pressure.
If it ends up being a longer term conflict, that would then add an additional complex dynamic to setting of interest rates and monetary policy.
While Australia doesn't directly trade with Iran, Robert Brooks believes our trade partners could be greatly impacted. He says it's a wait-and-see game to find out how the conflict could affect households.
So both government, Reserve Bank, financial markets are going to want to see, you know, how long are oil prices elevated for? The longer they're elevated for and the higher they get in an elevated period of time, that's then when you've got a bigger risk factor sitting there.
Robert Brooks from Monash University's Department of Economics and Business, Kimberly Price reporting. Australia's Jewish community has largely welcomed the assassination of Iran's supreme leader. Angus Randall reports.
Israeli forces clean up in Tel Aviv after Iran retaliates with a missile strike. In the central Israeli city of Ramat Gan, an underground hospital car park has been turned into a makeshift ward. Michelle Fischel-Bartal is the head of maternal fetal medicine.
This was a normal parking lot, and now it's a labour and delivery rooms.
Across Israel, civilians have rushed into shelters after two nights of strikes. For Australians with family members in Israel, it's a nervous wait. Linda Ben-Manashe is the president of the National Council of Jewish Women of Australia.
My own family in Israel, including my daughter, my sister, and all of our extended family who are indeed in shelters now, and there have been hits and there have been people killed, and there's a human cost to every war.
The assassination of Iran's supreme leader has been largely supported by those in Israel and Jewish Australians, despite Iran threatening retribution. Linda Ben-Menashe hopes it brings change.
I'm feeling both optimistic about the outcome of this war and the possibility of freedom for the Iranian people, in particular Iranian women, from the oppressive, misogynistic regime they've lived under for 47 years.
Israel says the Iranian regime backs Hamas in Gaza, Hezbollah in Lebanon, and the Houthis in Yemen, so there's scope for wider retaliation too. The Houthis have even threatened to resume attacks on cargo ships in the Red Sea, potentially shutting down the vital Suez Canal. Sarah Schwartz is an executive officer at the Jewish Council of Australia and a human rights lawyer.
International law exists to protect civilians and to restrain the use of force, and there is a clear prohibition on aggressive war and a requirement to distinguish between military and civilian targets. And those are binding obligations. And we have already seen the strikes on Iran having killed civilians, including a group of school children. This really suggests that these strikes aren't being conducted in compliance with international law.
It's unclear who will take power in Iran and whether the regime will ultimately crumble. Regardless, Sarah Schwartz worries the current conflict is not creating the right atmosphere for positive change.
We know that military aggression and bombardment are not things that lead to safe transitions in leadership. In fact, it's more likely to cause destabilization, upheaval, and violence that ultimately affects civilians in Iran. So we are deeply concerned for people in Iran. We're concerned about the repression that they have faced, particularly over the last few months, where many have been slaughtered by the regime itself. And that is what should be the primary concern for all parties involved.
Dr. Colin Rubenstein is the Executive Director of the Australia, Israel and Jewish Affairs Council. He says the American and Israeli strikes that kicked off the war are justified.
The United States and Israel are well within their rights of self-defence to act in a way that's strategically justified, morally certainly justified, given the appalling record of this regime and the dire threats against the United States as well as Israel, and despite what many are saying, absolutely legally justified as well.
That's Dr. Colin Rubenstein from the Australia, Israel and Jewish Affairs Council. Angus Randall reporting. A little-known part of the childcare sector, caring for some of Australia's most vulnerable children, is warning it's in danger of collapse without urgent government action. In-home care involves an educator coming to the family home, and it's used by about 1,000 families Australia-wide who live remotely, work night shifts, or are vulnerable due to illness or child protection orders. National education and parenting reporter Connor Duffy reports.
Busy mum Ellen Fitzgerald juggles raising three kids with work as a cattle grazier on the family property 165 kilometres northwest of Longreach. She credits in-home care, where an educator comes to their farm to look after the kids, with enabling her to return to work.
It just allows us to function as a family. Like, any family needs help with care when there are two working parents.
It already costs about $1,300 a fortnight and will jump to over $1,600 when the latest 5% pay rise for childcare workers kicks in today. That historic pay bump has been welcomed. But unlike parents whose children attend traditional daycare centres where government funds the pay rise, parents relying on in-home care fund it themselves. Ellen Fitzgerald believes the in-home care sector missing out on the government's worker retention scheme breaks a promise to lower childcare costs in the bush.
In fact, the opposite has occurred, and it has become so wildly expensive that we have to consider whether or not we can continue with it.
Nicole Morgan is an in-home care operator and president of its lobby group, the Australian Home Childcare Association.
So in-home care's key focus is to provide early education and care to children who cannot access mainstream childcare.
Ms Morgan says the families are in three cohorts, those in remote locations, parents on night shift, and vulnerable families battling serious disability or a major illness like cancer, as well as families under a child protection order. She says the sector is already under cost pressures, with three separate reviews identifying affordability problems. Now she fears her sector will collapse without access to the wage subsidies enjoyed by long daycare centres.
Absolutely. It's putting the whole purpose of early childhood education and care in Australia at risk.
In a statement, the Minister for Early Childhood Education, Senator Jess Walsh, said the government had passed cheaper childcare reforms to improve affordability for all parents. The minister said on average families are paying $3,500 less a year. Minister Walsh said the government supported in-home care through the childcare subsidy to expand access to parents who would otherwise miss out. The ABC understands the Department of Education is working with the in-home care sector on measures to support their workers.
Connor Duffy reporting. And that's all from the World Today team. Thanks for your company. I'm Annie Guest.